Welcome to On the Mersey Beat. Now, as we all know, Liverpool dominates the music in this area. But today we're going to feature a great guitarist who came from Southport, Ollie Halsall. Now, I'm talking to Barry Monks. Barry Monks has written the sleeve notes for a lot of albums that have come out featuring bands that Ollie Halsall was in, and he's working on a book about him at the moment. Barry, why is it that so few people know of Ollie?
Well, thanks, Spencer. I think basically it's because he was a very, very shy person. He didn't really know how talented he was, I don't think. The times I spoke to him, he was quite amazed at how interested people were in his playing. And I think that's probably the reason, really. He'd never really wanted to be a superstar.
OK, well, let's hear a track that features him. This is from a Neil Innes album, so tell us about it.
Well, this is a lovely little bit of throwaway rock and roll from Neil, from about 1978, I believe. Lovely little guitar solo from Ollie. It's a track called Mama B.
Neil Innes, and I actually see that CD is dedicated to Ollie Halsall.
It is, yes. Neil Innes was a good friend of Ollie's, and he's spoken about it many times. He worked on most of his albums, also on the Rutland TV show, Rutland Weekend TV, and also worked with Neil as well in The Ruttles, the famous Beatles parody. In fact, there's not many people know that Ollie Halsall actually sang the part of Dirk McQuickley for the album and for the film, because he could sing it better than, I think, who was the star of the film?
Eric
Idle, yes, that's right.
Really?
Yeah, it's Ollie's voice speeded up on that, and Ollie plays all the guitars and some of the keyboards on that as
well. Because Eric Idle himself has done quite a few songs.
He has, yes, he can sing, but they just didn't think it sounded quite right. I think Ollie had the...
Oh, because I wanted it to sound authentic.
Sound more like Paul McCartney, yes. And he was, yeah.
Right, okay, well, fill us in some details about Ollie. What are his dates, from when to when?
Right, he was born in 1949 in Southport, in Wavell Road, I don't know if anyone knows that. I haven't been there myself, but...
You'll have to go to Southport if you're doing the book, won't you?
I'll have to, yes, of course.
And indeed, if anybody knows Ollie Halsall...
Indeed, yes.
If they can get in touch with me, Spencer Lee at On the Mersey Beat, here at Radio Merseyside. We'll pass the details on
Thank
to you.
Thank you, yeah. If someone sends me a map of how to get to Wavell Road, I'll come and see it, yeah.
From people who knew Ollie, people who were at school with him, anything like
That's
that.
Right, yes, I believe his last relations are still there. I don't know if his parents are still alive, but hopefully they are. They probably still live in that area.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So, yeah, he went to art school, apparently, in Southport and or Liverpool, and with a guy called Chris Holmes, who was a keyboard player, and Clive Griffiths, a bass player. And they formed a band called Take Five in about 1965. They came down to London in 66 or so and changed the name to Time Box. And they had quite a lot of success, actually, in Time Box in the London club scene. Yeah. They were great favourites of the...
Does the name Time Box mean anything?
Apparently it's American slang for a prison cell, but I don't think they actually knew that. It was just a nice word for the time. Right. Time Box, it sounds good.
Okay, well, the record I know by Time Box, yeah. Or the record that I know best is Begging, because that was almost a big hit record.
It was. I think it got to about number 36 in the charts.
And what's the story of that? Why did they do it, a Four Seasons cover?
It was suggested to them as a good cover to do, and I think it's an excellent version of it. It features Ollie on the vibraphone. Ah. Which is very good, actually.
And how did he learn to play that?
Well, that's an very interesting story. It's a very strange instrument, the vibraphone, not best known in rock music at all, by any means. He wanted to play the vibraphone. He started playing drums originally. He wanted to play the vibes, and he said to his parents, "Can I have some vibraphones?" And they said, "If you learn to play them, you can have some," which is a bit of a catch-22 situation. So apparently, what he did, he got some strips of paper, laid them out on his bed in the shape of the vibraphone, got some beaters with his pocket money, and actually learnt to play them like air guitar, as it were, an air vibraphone. Apparently he did this, and they brought in the vibraphone, and...
Here we are.
From there, yeah. Put your loving hand down, baby. I'm begging.
Begging there from Time Box, and one of the musicians on that was Ollie Holson, who we're talking about today. Ollie Holson from Southport. And there's a lot of Time Box tracks. In fact, I didn't realise there were so many of them, Barry, because this CD that you've done the sleeve notes for, and they're very, very comprehensive as well. came out on DRAM a couple of years ago and has got 24 tracks on it.
Yes, it was.
I only seem to remember a few singles from Time Bomb.
Well, they only had a few singles. They didn't actually release any albums, unfortunately, at the time, but they did actually record an album that was never released. The idea, what we tried to do, was to actually release this lost gem, as it were, but DRAM wouldn't have it, and they wanted to put the B-sides and A-sides mixing together, so it's why it's such a long album. Ideally, it would have been just the long-lost Time Box album.
And why was this album never released?
Various reasons. I don't think people thought it was right for the time. They wanted to steer them more in the direction of Begging and the sort of more commercial poppy things. The stuff they were writing, as most people at that time, was more into the psychedelia and that sort of thing.
Okay, well, let's hear the opening track in this Time Box album, Gone is a Sad Man. What's the story of that?
Well, it's a really interesting little song, actually. It shows the sort of direction they were in and many people were at that time. It's a bit of psychedelia, basically. It sounds very loosely based on Baby You're a Rich Man by the Beatles. It's got that sort of chugging beat and features Ollie playing a keyboard and a bit of guitar. And it's just a lovely little song, actually, very reminiscent of the times.
Is a sad man. You can definitely see a Beatles influence in there, can't you?
Yes.
Now, Time Box, five members in that. How many of them came from Southport?
The three of them, basically. Chris Holmes, the keyboard player, known as Prof, Professor Holmes, and Clive Griffiths, the bass player, and Ollie Halsall. And they came to London, and they the personnel changed a bit. Towards the end, they had a guy called Mike Patto, mm-hmm. very famous singer from London club scene, yeah. And drummer John Halsey, excellent drummer, one of the best drummers of that period. And that came together as the final version of Time Box, which mm-hmm. later became Patto after Chris Holmes left.
Right, well, we'll be talking about the Patto releases in a minute or two, but let's stick with the Beatles connection, I suppose, because that never left Ollie, as it were.
No, that's right.
How did Neil Innes and Eric Idle come to recruit him for the Ruttles?
He was vaguely involved with the Monty Python thing, and also things like Tiz Was, the famous kids' TV show. Him and John Halsey were on that. John Halsey played the drums on it every week, and they did all the jingles for it. I think they probably messed around that sort of time. Mm-hmm. And they did the Rutland Weekend television thing. And when Neil decided to do the Ruttles, he obviously looked for some musicians to help him out with it. Ollie was his first choice.
And I suppose Ollie as a guitarist was the right sort of guitarist, because a lot of the guitarists who came up after the Beatles in the 60s were very influenced by Eric Clapton, weren't they?
Yes.
Very blues-based and
that's
such.
Right, yeah.
And Ollie really wasn't.
Well, that's right. He was a bit of a chameleon, really. I mean, he could play in sort of any style. And he played a lot with people like Grimms, Roger McGough and people like that, and Scaffold as well, in which he was required to almost play any style for any sort of skit they were doing. So he could play any style of music with great ease. Mm-hmm.
But doing the Beatles-type stuff came
yes.
fairly easily to him.
I think it did. I think he was a great admirer of the Beatles, Paul McCartney especially.
Okay.
And,
okay, well, here's the Ruttles. So the Ruttles there with Major Happy, and I'm talking to Barry Monks, who's a researcher on the Southport guitarist Ollie Halsall, writing a book about him at the moment, written several sleeve notes of CDs that feature Ollie. When did you first come across him yourself?
Well, it was many years ago, about 30 years ago, when I was playing in bands myself. We played one-nighter, an all-nighter at a place in Covent Garden called The Temple, and they had the good sense to go on first, so in fact we topped the bill over them. But
you know, and what was the name of your band?
Dulciana, it was called. I don't know why, what it means, but it's lost in the mist of time. But when I first saw him, I really couldn't believe it. I mean, it was quite incredible to see him play guitar. I'd seen Hendrix a few years before that, and it's a very similar feeling to seeing him. No, I'd never heard anyone play quite like that. He played like a saxophonist, basically, in the sense that he plays very, very fluently and very almost like he was breathing as he was playing the notes. It was actually a true jazz player in the sense of someone like Django Reinhardt, who's I always think is very similar in style. Like a sort of late 60s version of Reinhardt, I think, really.
And did the rest of the group realise what a talent they'd got in the band?
I think they certainly did, yes. But in fact, Paso were such an amazing band anyway. They were greater than the sum of their parts anyway. They were quite a unique experience to see live. A lot of humour involved. Mm-hmm. A great band.
Did Ollie, though, have some sort of gremlin inside him that stopped him becoming a superstar?
Yes, I think he did, actually. It's interesting that when he made the first two Paso albums, he actually achieved quite a name as a guitarist. A lot of the famous name guitarists came to see him playing in the Marquee and places like that. When he came to do the next album, it's almost on purpose. He didn't play any guitar on it, hardly. Very few guitar solos. Played the piano all the way through it, almost as if he could sense the adulation or the sense of the feeling, and he just rebelled against it and played the piano instead. Strange.
Right, so let's hear this track by Pato, Give It All Away.
Yes, can I just say something? This is actually one of the most remarkable pieces of guitar playing I think anyone's ever put down on record. If you just remember, it's 1971, a long time before people like Eddie Van Halen and all that sort of thing. It is probably the fastest guitar solo that's ever been recorded, and the best.
you can sense when that record starts and he's putting a few little bits in there, he's getting ready to take off, isn't it? And it's just wonderful stuff.
A few
stuff.
Little tasters, yeah.
Yeah. And so he was able to recreate that live on stage, everywhere.
Absolutely, yes. Oh, yes. He was still playing at that up to shortly before he died in 1992. I saw him a few weeks before and he was still playing just as fast and just even better, in fact. Mm-hmm.
Did his death come as a total surprise?
Yes, completely, yeah. Yes, total shock, really, yeah. He died of a heart attack. He was only actually 42 years old, and it was supposedly drug-related. I don't really know. It doesn't really, you know, come into the equation, but it was a great shock, yeah. There's no indication at all of that when I saw him last.
Yeah. And had he been living out of the country for some time?
Yes, he lived in Spain, actually. He lived in the north of Mallorca, a place called Deia, a lovely part of northern Mallorca, for many years with Kevin Ayers, who he played with in later a portion of his career. And he toured Europe and the Far East as well with Kevin a few times every couple of years.
Well, we're going to play another track by Pato now, and this is something very special that you've got. Yes.
Yes, this is from Auntie Beebe, actually. This is one of the songs from their vaults. It's a track from the session of the John Peel show in 1973, I think it is. And
what is it?
It's a track called San Antone.
The lilting sound you hear is John Peel playing his harmonica. What he's trying to say is the Pattos visited America and discovered San Antonio, which they thought was San Antone. Well, here's their musical renditioning of their million-selling hit from their first million-selling album.
Great, that was just great.
All right? Was it all right? Did I get the accent? Beautiful. Yeah? Great. Cool, man.
Yeah.
Pato recorded for the John Peel Show in 1973. And you were saying it's not a track you brought in here, but one of Pato's tracks actually mentions the Southport Visitor.
Yes, it does. It's on my third album called Roll and Smoke and Put Another Line Out. There's the track there called Peter Abraham.
Just say that title again.
Roll and Smoke and Put Another Line Out.
And you say Ollie wasn't involved in jokes.
Just a play on words, I think.
Yeah. But what was it about Southport Visitor?
It was a lovely little track, actually, called Peter Abraham, and it's just about all his friends in Southport, basically. Peter Abraham, who I don't know if he's still alive, I hope he is, mentioned, and trail about him cutting his toes off with a lawnmower, apparently, and the event was recorded in the Visitor paper, which is still going, apparently. Yeah. It's quite nice.
So he kept his roots with Southport, then?
Yes, he did. I don't know how often he went back there, but obviously he'd still talk about it, yes.
Yeah, well, you'll have to find that out when you finish the book.
Yes, yes. Indeed.
I mean, that's it. I mean, you can do all these sleeve notes here and write about the tracks and everything, which you've done in a very good way, but when it actually comes to the book, you've got to get so much of the detail, haven't you?
That's what I'm missing, really. I'd like to talk to some people who knew him better than I did, yes. Especially some people from around here, really, from the Southport area. Mm-hmm. Isn't anyone still remembers him?
Yeah. And, of course, they may have a completely different picture of him.
Absolutely, yes. Yes, he was a very, very complex personality. I think the best way to describe him was actually as sort of bohemian in lifestyle, especially towards the end.
Well, that implies he'd be pretty unreliable.
Totally unreliable, yes. He had no regard for money, as far as I could see. On the record advance they got for the first Pato album, which I think was about £600, he reputedly went out and bought a Persian carpet, which was about 10 times the size of his flat. Had no use for it. It was just total, just spend it. Mm-hmm. Why not, you know? Yeah. That sort of thing. And also, sorry, later on, another record advance he got, drummer John Horsey tells me that he bought the plans for a yacht. Mm-hmm. He was going to sail around the world with it. He just stuck the plans on the wall, and that's about as far as he got with it.
Yeah. Was he married? Did he have a family?
Yes, he had a wife called Monica, and they split up sometime during the 70s. And he had two daughters, apparently, and a son. But no one yet knows where they are.
Right. Okay, well, let's move to another album that features Ollie Halsall now. This is a group called Boxer. Yes. Now, I seem to remember an album by a group called Boxer. I presume it's the same group that was very, very controversial. It featured, I think, and this is why I remember it, it featured a naked woman and boxing clubs on the front.
That's right, yes. Yes, a very provocative pose by a model called Stephanie Marion. It was a very good album, actually. I don't think the publicity worked particularly. It didn't sell very well, unfortunately. It was a good album. But they made a second album, the track we're going to play next, called Bloodletting, which was partly released. It was a bit of a contractual problem, and it was never fully released till a few years ago, actually.
Well, what do you mean by partly released?
Well, I think they'd actually broken up at the time, and the record company wasn't sure whether to release it or not. So they'd released it in some parts of the country, not others. I think it was released abroad, perhaps. Yeah. But it's never had a proper release. It's another very good album, featuring mainly Mike Pato songs and some covers. There's a great track on it. They do a superb cover of the Beatles' Hey Bulldog, which, as many people will know, is the best single the Beatles ever released. And this is Boxer doing Hey Bulldog. Thank you.
Now, Barry, I think I'm right in saying that Ollie Holsell never released a solo album in his lifetime.
No, he didn't, no.
So how come there's a solo Ollie Holsell album out now called Caves?
I'm glad you asked that. It came from a chap called John Otway, many people may have heard of. John Otway is actually a genius. He's still playing guitar. He used to be with Wild Woody
Genius?
Band. Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, one of the few real geniuses in music, Otway is. He used to play with Wild Billy Barrett back in the 70s, a sort of punkish sort of thing. He still plays, and he's great. He played with Ollie for some time in around 1979. In fact, they did a tour of the States together on a cheap version on, I think it was Laker Airlines in those days, where they took their guitars on their laps in the plane and went to Greyhound buses around the States. It was awful, apparently a terrible experience for both of them. But at the time, they recorded some stuff together, and Ollie had a little cassette of songs which he gave to Otway that he might be interested in playing. I contacted him some years ago, John Otway, and said, did you have any photographs or anything? So, and he said, well, I've got this tape that Ollie gave me of some stuff. I thought you might like to hear it. And when I heard it, I was absolutely amazed, because it was actually complete songs, studio recordings, not particularly good quality, unfortunately, because I think this may be a copy of a copy. We had them remastered, and it's a complete album, so we released it as an album called Caves.
Now, you say you haven't been able to get in touch with Ollie's wife.
No.
But surely she'd be entitled to the royalties from this.
Well, if it made any money, theoretically, yes. It's pretty much desperate if it's going to make a profit. But she will, I suppose, in English law, yes, apparently.
But will you try and get in touch with her for that?
We did try. We put some adverts in the papers to try and trace people, just in case there was a profit and a residue which someone might have a claim on, and the money is there if someone wants to claim it, what little there is.
Right, now we're going to play a track called Summertime Kids. Anything
yes.
to say about this?
I don't know much about these songs, really, because as I say, nor does John Otway, they were essentially demos that Ollie recorded. For what purpose, we don't know. They do sound like proper studio recordings. Whether he intended to release an album, I don't know, but I don't know what the song's about. It's just a nice sort of summary tune.
And what's Ollie doing on it?
He's playing everything on it. He's playing the drums, the bass, and the guitar, and some keyboards in the background, and singing the vocals and harmonies.
Waiting for the summertime kids.
So, a song that had been lost for 25 years?
Absolutely, it would have been lost forever. Yeah. Unfortunately, yes.
And tell us about this album, because we'll play another track from it. It's okay. On Market Square. It's a brand new album.
Yes.
What about the packaging, which it looks a bit strange?
Well, it's a bright red and yellow packaging for anyone who can't see it. And it's basically, the artwork is some pictures of caves that Ollie drew. He was a great artist, and he drew some wonderful pen and ink drawings of caves, and we just use one of these and colour them in red and yellow to possibly match the first Pato album, which was red and yellow as well. That was the link there, but it looks really attractive, I think.
Okay, and let's have another track from the album, First Day in New York.
Yes, okay, this is a song that was written by Ollie when he first went to New York with Kevin Ayers in about 1976 or so.
So that's another track from the album Caves by Ollie Holsell. That's in the shops now on Market Square Records. They sound far more than demos that are just going to be given to John Otway.
Yes, I often wonder exactly what the full story is actually behind them, but they are very well produced. We did some enhancement to the tape, so it's been remastered, and it does sound very good, as you can hear.
Yep. Okay, well, let's deal with last week's competition, which was when I had Peter Doggett on the show from, formerly from Record Collector, and he'd written his book, Are You Ready for the Country? The answer to the question was, Willie Nelson and Elvis Presley have both had hits with Always On My Mind, and the competition prize is tickets to see Chris Clayton, who was also on the show last week, at the Summer Pops next Thursday. That's a week tomorrow at the Summer Pops, so who wins tickets to see him?
Mr. Jay Atherton of 12 East Avenue, Great Sankey, Warrington.
Okay, well done to you.
And Mr. Michael Needham of 23 Spindle Close, Everton.
Okay, and tickets will be in the post to you to see Chris Clayton a week tomorrow at the Summer Pops. Right, let's go back to Neil Innes. This is a track called Fluff on the Needle. So what do you want to say about this one?
It's a lovely little bit of guitar playing, basically. What Ellie used to do is he played on many records as a session musician. He played on a total of 77 records, I think, in this country alone, which is quite extraordinary. He was in great demand as a session man. Neil used him all the time, and this is a lovely little song and a great solo.
Fluff on the Needle there from Neil Innes and Ollie Halsall. We're coming towards the end of the show now. Just let me, well, not correct something. I just want a bit of an explanation on it. You said Ollie had played on 77 tracks. Did you mean tracks or albums? Or
albums, tracks, 77 albums. As far as I know, there may be more, actually, but I've managed to collect a discography together of that many.
So, in fact, he may have played on about 500 records.
Oh, quite possibly, yes.
Tracks, yes.
Quite certainly, yes.
That's pretty amazing. So the discography is going to take
quite
a quite long
yes,
space.
Indeed, yes.
even though it was unreliable at times.
Well, he must have got himself together for these things anyway, yes.
Right, and so you're interested, Barry, in anyone who knew Ollie Halsall?
Yes, please,
to get in
yes.
touch with me and I'll pass
certainly,
that on
or
to
if
you.
Anyone wants to visit a website, which is www.zyworld.com/caves, there's links to other good sites on there as well, actually, you might be interested.
You better say that again.
It's www.zyworld.com/caves, C-A-V-E-S.
Okay, and we'll go out with a quick minute from this. This is a new album by Pat.
It's a new Pat album, yes.
Warts and all, and where does this come
it
from?
It comes from drummer John Halsey, who salvaged this from his suitcase of goodies, and he's released it on his own record label, Admiral Records, available from his pub in Cambridge. I got the address from him, someone wants to contact me. It's a great little live album of Pat.
Okay, Barry Monks, thanks very much for coming in today.
Thank you, Spencer.